When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is sponsored by Outstanley. If you are a small indie studio or even a big one, and you need that extra push for graphical fidelity, then you would want to give Outstanley a call. These guys can up your game, pun totally intended, for game-ready 2D or 3D assets, animations, and UI to make sure your imagination is completely realized. Outstanley is a one-stop shop for all your visual needs, and as an extra bonus, by being a Game Dev Unchained listener, go to outstanley.com, that is spelled outstanley.com, and say that you're a Game Dev Unchained listener, and you will get a special discount or bonus production for your order. Guys, game development is already really hard, so why not make it easier by working with these high-quality professionals and save some headaches? Again, go to outstanley.com, like outstanding, just outstanley, and say that Game Dev Unchained sent you. All right, today's episode is pretty interesting. We have the great Ryan Kingsling that helped the beginning of my journey into ZBrush. We talk primarily about entrepreneurship. So listeners of the last episode about my focus this year is a new transition in my life. I'm not just a salary man anymore. I am running my own business that I'm actually documenting my process and progress to all Patreon supporters out there. So if you want to help support and give a listen to the exclusive Life Unchained episode where I talk about how things are going, you want to go to patreon.com/bluechamps and give some love over there. But this was a great episode with Ryan. We were able to talk about his beginnings and his transition and focus to his passion of educating the masses for game development. We talked through his failures and success and constantly him learning about this whole business world and what he does to prepare and deal with unexpected results. So I walked away from this interview learning a lot about Ryan, about myself, and the things that he needed to talk about. And it was very enlightening. So this year, starting off with our first guest, Ryan Kingsling, was a great move because it's something that I am really wanting to nail down this year as part of my New Year's resolution, just the transitional period of running a business and learning on the go. All right, hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you.
What's up, everybody? Oh my god, talk about technical difficulties. Finally can hear me. This is your host, Brandon Pham. Welcome to Game Dev Unchained, the number one podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. And coming with me, a special guest that has been patiently waiting, Ryan Kingsling. So I'm going to unmute you real quick so that everybody can hear your lovely voice. And here we go. You are on.
Awesome. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Ryan, I've been a longtime fan. Thank you for welcoming you, welcoming me onto your podcast. This is the part of the podcast. Of course. Before we go into too much detail, I kind of want to spend this part to let you introduce yourself to the audience out there of who you are, where you're from, and where you're heading.
So, in simple terms, I'm CEO of Game Art Institute, and I I've just spent the last decade training creatives to get really kind of really artists to get creative tech careers, like really just fun jobs in the new industry. I actually got my start as a as employee number five, I think it was number five of Pixelogic, and where we developed ZBrush and helped them develop from ZBrush 2 to ZBrush 3 and then a little bit further on than that. But in that process, I kind of learned my love for education and just decided that once I left that, that was where I really wanted to make an impact in the world. And so I built ZBrush workshops. I built UArtsy, Visualarium. You know, I built a lot of initiatives. Majority of them failed, you know, largely burned to the ground of my own making. And today, Game Art Institute's primary focus and my primary focus is training for character artists and environment artists and kind of filling the gap that traditional education leaves, because it just, you know, knowledge isn't power. You have to have something else. You have to have execution. This is an execution game. So we train people on execution, and that's been my focus, is what helps people, specifically creatives, execute and achieve some level of capacity so that they become hireable. So that's me in a nutshell. Where we're going is we have a new initiative we call Vertex School, and that is coming up, I think, in a couple of months. And we're building machine learning training programs and a bunch of stuff to help creatives kind of expand into what's going to be the next generation of tech.
Dude, that's super exciting. I mean, I was turned to you, obviously, in the early ZBrush days. I have your voice and your teachings associated with ZBrush exclusively, because it was such a new program. It was very new. And I thank you. And I think the community thanks you for kind of helping us navigate through that crazy interface and everything about character anatomy, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
But like, your transition is something that I've been noticing for a lot of veterans later in the career, where they found education being pretty much recession proof. I don't know how accurate that is, but also like as like a secondary passion and some, in some cases like yours, become a primary passion. And when it comes to entrepreneurship, which is, I feel like, one of the main topics I want to talk to you about in this episode, like how did you figure that shit out? I mean, it's something that I think in our traditional art school, we don't even have an elective that covers how to do business or walk down that path. I mean, can you talk about the early days of testing these grounds? You're talking about learning through your failings and being able to kind of truck through that. Any insight on that?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is it's not been figured out, you know, so I'm still failing, still succeeding. And I think you're right. It is something that it's hitting a lot of people in our industry now, is that they're heading off into education. And in many ways, it seems like that's the recession-proof approach. But once you get into business, you realize, you know, business is business. It's been around forever. There's a whole physics to the way in which businesses operate. And that becomes its own thing. And it is not the same thing as being an artist. So you can quickly find yourself at odds with why you're doing it. And that's something that has to be kind of addressed, you know. And I got into business unintentionally. I'm an accidental entrepreneur by all means. And it was just, the company I worked for, the last company I worked for, where I worked for somebody who made me decide I would never work for anybody else again, was just a horrible experience. You know, it was just a bad boss. And, you know, he was going through his own crap. So, you know, I'm sure what he was struggling with was real stuff in the middle of the depression. And, you know, so all good there, but it was still a bad experience for me. And I, as a creative, realized how little control I had over my life and decided I was going to get control. You know, I went off, I started freelancing, and I realized I was just, you know, I was basically working the same hours plus more hours, drumming up work. And then my wife told me that she was pregnant and that we were having a kid. And I was like, I got to level my game up. You know, how do I do that? And this was in the beginning of internet marketing and all this stuff. And, you know, Jeff Walker had this class called Product Launch Formula. Mm-hmm. And that class kind of opened me up to being, you know, we didn't have this word back then, but an influencer who's launching classes and builds a business around that. And I had no idea what any of that meant. I just knew that I had some standing in the community and I had the capacity to teach. I loved it. And maybe somebody might actually take a class or two. And we started with my own classes. We just were like, we're just going to offer this out. And nobody else was doing it. So it just grew gangbusters. We trained thousands of people. We brought people into it. We had partners, all this kind of stuff. And then more people started to flood into it. And then people were able to do this on their own through Gumroad. And so, you know, right around that time, that's when it became more real. It became more of a business because competition was there. And there was more options for people to do stuff. So we had to convince people to go with us or do things on their own. And, you know, we had to figure this stuff out. And you know, those were very difficult years. And they were mixed right with just a couple of years before, I was really unhappy with my own artwork. And so, you know, I had a team releasing classes and doing stuff. But I personally wasn't satisfied. And I was struggling to figure out, like, what's my art? What's important to me? And what makes, you know, a difference. And that struggle, man, I mean, like, there was the business struggle. And in the beginning, it was not a real struggle because we were in what they would call a blue ocean. So it was just, you know, it was a free for all. And as long as you were adding value, it was great. When it got to a red ocean, we started to struggle. And that's where we're at today a little bit, is we're in a bit of a red ocean in terms of training, and people are undercutting pricing and everybody's trying to go cheap and and they're doing normal business tactics. Right. And so what I had to decide myself, and this is like, if we bring this back to how'd you figure it out? I'd say I haven't figured it out, but what I have figured out is you just got to find what you want to do. Right. Like, what's the mission? What can you lead people in? And that's where I took 2 years, and I took Game Art Institute. I was working with a partner and we severed the relationship. I had a bunch of other teachers. I severed those relationships and I focused on just what I wanted to do, which was basically get somebody a job. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find a path where it's like, you can take that guy and grab some water. I had a class right before this, so I was talking nonstop. I wanted to find that guy that was like working at Starbucks, or the job I had, which was, you know, a night restocker at Costco, you know? And I mean, I've worked on an assembly line. I've worked in construction. I've worked in bookstores. I've worked as a pizza delivery guy. You know, I've done all those jobs, and I wanted to find that guy and give him a path to a job so that, you know, he goes from 20,000-30,000, whatever this current job is, to 60,000, but not just that, but he's doing something that he loves that would have not been possible before. And that, in all honesty, I mean, traditional education is ill-equipped to prepare somebody for, you know. I wanted to make that difference in the world. And we did. We built the boot camp. The boot camp is the primary vehicle for that. And that's the thing that I feel I can lead people. And that's the mission of my life. That's where I could stand up. I can be in here with this, in this meeting with you, because I'm very, introverted. Even though I'm on camera and, you know, I work on a persona and I project, if I don't have to do that kind of stuff, I don't, you know, I like to just kind of be behind the scenes. But that mission of getting that person that job, that was the siren's call that led me to kind of get through all the other crap, you know, I have to get through, which includes cash flow. You know, that's something you got to think about in a business, is how much money do you have come in? I love to spend money. I'm an artist. You know, it's like, I want this guy's tutorial. I want this thing. Let me buy it. Let me get it. Let me work with this person. Right. But I got to think, you know, do we have the students? Is the cash flow coming in? And so there's these real business concerns. And the only way that I will invest myself, because I have to make tiny sacrifices, the only way I would invest myself is if it's a big enough, if it's a big enough call to what, to my mission in life, you know, which that is, you know, because I now know what that is. I know I have one focus, getting somebody a job that would not have gotten a job before. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that totally makes sense. I could definitely relate to that. Oh, my camera's all stuck. But the one thing that's really relative to what you're saying is I'm similar in that phase. I'm probably several phases mm-hmm. back because you got your skin in the game longer than I have. But I feel like a lot of game developers that I do talk to have found themselves running or a business or going into business is because they had a horrible or multiple horrible experiences and then realizing how little control they've had. I mean, I know personally, mm-hmm. that's what I went through. Just, I know you're based in Orange County. I grew up in Orange County as well. It's not a lot of Orange County jobs. So all the good jobs that I've ever had was always in San Francisco, LA, and that commute is insane. And just, you know, going back and forth in that, I think we talked about this many times before, really showed how little control I had. And then, like you said, the onslaught of family really pushes you to grow up a bit. Really fast. And I it's a very similar tale that many game developers have told me. And it seems like the only way to really challenge yourself and not get comfortable. And it's an insane journey for sure.
It's also, if I can interrupt, it's a journey that all aspects have, because I know we as creatives tend to think of ourselves as like different because we're, you know, we're so far removed from other fields. But dentists have this, for example. My brother runs dentist office and they're basically artists. They're artists in their field, but yet they have to run a business. And so there's so many people who start companies because they're an expert in something, they're an artist in something, and they feel like they need more control, but you don't realize the cost of getting that control. And that's the conversation that you begin to have. It's a conversation I'm always having, you know, because my preference would be I go to Bali and I go grab clay from the riverbank and go sculpt a bunch of naked figures. And that's it. Like, I would love to do that. But then what do my kids get for education? Probably crap, you know, and it just goes from there.
Yeah. The constant need of looking at the whole family and all your dependents and being able to spread that joy, it's something that I'm taking from business and applying to my own life. Like the simple terms of income and expense starts to kind of spoil into other parts of your life. It's like, well, I mean, yes, it'd be great to do this, but at the same time, you know, what am I spending to achieve that?
And what do you have to give up?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So like in terms of self-education on the business side, I know there's a lot of like, trial by error that comes with its territory. But what kind of resources that you felt over the years have really helped you kind of forge this path for yourself? Like books, mentor, or any type that you felt like, hey, these are tremendous resources for anyone that is out there going through this or thinking about doing this. These are the five main or five top two things that has helped me.
Yeah. Now I'm glad you asked, you know, because there's no shortage of consultants to help you do this. And consultants love to get paid, you know, up front. They love to get paid in the middle. They love to get paid at the end of a project. They love to get paid, but do they deliver results? Do training programs deliver results? You know, I have a business training program that I give, right? You know, does it deliver results? What is going to improve you and your capacity to you know, be a creative and run your own business. And I mean, we've done everything. We started out, we spent $10,000 on this eMyth program in the early days, and we had a coach with us for a while. Then we spent God knows how much money on Tony Robbins and a coach there. And the thing that ultimately shifted me, and it took a while for the shift to affect, was actually a group called Wake Up Warrior. And they don't operate in the same way now. But they had a boot camp that, you know, they just put you through this physical boot camp that showed me I was capable of more physically than I thought I was possible of achieving, you know. And it's not just like exercise. It was more like, you know, you get 3 hours of sleep, you're eating pancakes in the push-up position, right? Because it's like, it was a 36-hour event. And one, to give you an idea of it, one of the things was they wake us all up and somebody's behind. So now somebody's behind. So we're all getting punished as a group. And how do we get punished as a group? You know, we just started eating breakfast. We got all the syrup on our pancakes. We're all ready to eat this. And what happens? You can't use your hands. Everybody's forced to get in a push-up position. Your plate is down in front of you and you have to down, take a bite, up, swallow that. Down, take a bite, up, swallow that, right? And I got full beard and, you know, I got syrup in my beard. I got all kinds of crap. And before, when they first said, you got to do this in this, I was like, you're out of your effing mind, man. I mean, like, I'm paying good money and you want me to do what? Like, I'm the master of my ship here, asshat. You don't tell me what to do. I mean, I'm not doing it. And I was like, no, I think I'm out, but nobody else left. Mm. So, am I going to be the loser that leaves? And then there's the peer pressure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's so actors.
Then I'm in. I'm like, oh yeah. Right.
That's what your money's going.
I'm like, okay, we're doing it. And then in the middle of it, he's like, you guys are a bunch of pansies. If your kids were here, they'd be having fun doing this. And you guys are treating this like it's the end of the world and somebody's hurt your feelings. Your kids would be, their face would be covered in gunk. And put your face in the syrup. Cover that face up, right? And he's yelling at us and screaming at us. But it all made sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's how you see these things. And so, you know, that was an event that happened. But basically the point of that is, you know, and I can only speak from a male perspective. I don't understand the female perspective very well. Try as I might, I have to admit my limitation there. And from a male perspective, you're a creative. You want to run a business. One of the biggest things that changed my life and helped me kind of get control over myself was pushing my limits physically. You know, physically doing something. So there was that. And then after that, I got a personal trainer and I went from 155 pounds to 175 pounds and, you know, 20 pounds of muscle is not easy to lock in. Like you gotta eat. I mean, I eat so much morning, noon and night and breakfast. I mean, I was just eating all the time, but that one event where I pushed myself physically and I achieved something physically that I didn't think was possible, that changed me. And so, you know, for some people that could be CrossFit. Like you look at Seth Nash, who lost all that weight doing CrossFit, and, you know, the quality of life and the conversation I had with him, you know, it's just, it changes you when you as a guy realize that your body is capable of more than you thought. You know, and you take some control over that, or at least when I started to take some control over that, that's when things really shifted for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's something I feel a lot of developers get too comfortable with, especially I mentioned this many times in the podcast. We would feel like that at the AAA development level, those are the highest quality, and in most cases they are, but we forget that those are 5 to 8 year cycles. So the chances of them experimenting with new tools or finding new ways of doing things is very little. It's more like they're in the rhythm of things and they keep at it. And so, when those artists or developers get out of that cycle, they are lost in a new world of, up and coming artists, challenges, and it's just a whole different development cycle. So
totally.
constantly pushing yourself and finding those growth moments is something I think really helps with being in business. And I like that little challenge that you had by not taking things too seriously all the time, because I find myself having that laser focus is great for certain things, but being able to constantly step back and look at the overall perspective. You mentioned family before. I find myself doing that a lot. I work from home mostly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by doing business, you just want to make sure you put it, you know, all the hours in to make sure that you're getting the utmost results. But, you know, we have to take a step back. So why are you doing this? To spend more time with your family, to enjoy life, right? And if your kid wants to play ball, you know, those are moments that you should step outside of your little bubble and enjoy the advantages of being at home and all that. And that's something I have to constantly battle with and to understand and get with. I mean, how was that transition? You were mentioning, you know, you started this journey with your first child about to come into the world. I'm assuming you have more children now since then.
Two. Yeah, I got two now.
Two now.
Well, you know, I tell people I started my business to have more time with my family. And that's like the biggest rookie mistake out there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like starting a family so you can have more alone time. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't work out quite that way. So, you know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and I didn't understand, you know, the parameters of that. And so the way I deal with it now is just in cycles. So for example, right now I'm in a grind. I'm 12 hours a day, and I get about a 2 to 3 hour window with the kids. But as soon as they're asleep, I'm working. And so that's just the phase I'm in right now, because we're launching Vertex, and we're trying to get a handle on all the new tech. So for me, it's cycles, and I have that time with them in the evening. And then what I'm doing now is on Saturdays, I'm fairly religious about, let's grab the skateboards, let's get the bikes. And I have a mission of what I need to achieve, want to achieve with them, you know, within range. I have to force them a little bit, because I got to play that daddy role. Like my son would, he's six, and he would watch Scooby-Doo 26 hours out of 24. I mean, he's relentless on that. So he needs structure, and and I've got him, skateboarding now. But I turn it into a challenge for myself. It's like, how do I teach this guy skateboarding, you know, and how do I teach him these different things? And so it engages me, because now I'm like, okay, how do I chunk this? So I got to teach him about different things like step stand. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to create a YouTube tutorial for teaching 6-year-old skateboarding. Right. And I'm not going to do that anytime soon, but that's my motivation. It's like, I have this other side that's empowering my time with my kids. And so there's this multiple purposes to it, that empowers them, empowers me, and, you know, creates a powerful moment. Cause ultimately it's my job that they learn to ride a bike and they skateboard, you know? Yeah. So I have to find a way to do that with all the other time. And it comes basically from giving that time a bit of a mission. And then, you know, every Saturday, that's our time, mm-hmm. you know, together. Does that make sense?
Definitely, man. It's something. I have a family of my own, and what I figured, mm-hmm. you know, going into business with my partner is not just me and my partner. All the other time I have to manage giving. I hate to say it like this, but it's a worker employer type of mentality with the family. Sometimes it's like, hey, all right, the kids have to learn this. All right, these are the things we got to learn and have fun with. Mm-hmm. All right, I got to spend time with mm-hmm. the wife. All right, I got to foster that love mentality so we don't get a divorce.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it takes time. I mean,
it takes time. Yeah. 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 And overall, like, I think if I were to look back, you know, I only started doing this just past year, so I've only been in the game for like 8 months, just spending full time on this. It's been such a fruitful 8 months. You know, was able to kind of coach my son's football team for the first time, stuff that I would never do during the day. And It sounds glory, you know, it sounds glorious in retrospect, but there's so much hard time, as you were talking about, to kind of, because if you think of a regular developer's time and how they spend 8 hours and go home, you got to do twice or three times as much just to maintain that, just to see 10 years of your fruit and labor later. If everything goes well, right? That's when you really enjoy things and see the scale kind of stack up our way.
I've had teachers, you know, because we've been doing this about 9 years. And so we've had, for the most part, we've had great relationships with teachers. If there's been any failing, it's been my failing of just being too busy and, you know, something that just the business did dumb, you know, but... You know, we've had a couple of instances where we've had partners that just turned toxic, and one of them created his own school in the middle of me launching his class, and just kind of sidelined me, and you know, it was done really horribly, in my opinion. But you know, I understood the pressure. This guy wanted control, you know, and he needed control, so he took extreme measures, which meant, you know, doing what he did, you know, with our business relationship. So, you know, I'm not going to fault him for it, but at the end of the day, you know, that school that he created, you know, burned down just like some of my other businesses, because, you know, he thought you can go out there and you can do this and I'll get some control, but you know, he didn't realize the cost of that control. And today he, you know, he works for somebody else and he does some stuff on his own. And that's a great solution for people. When you have the day job and you have your business on the side, you know, that's something where it's like, you have the best of both worlds. As long as you have the time, you can do that, you know? And, somebody who I admire, for doing that right now is Chris Costa, you know, with his Fly on the Wall Studios. And he's set up a really nice, I mean, just it's structurally, I haven't talked to him in ages, but it's a beautiful system where it's like, he has his day job and at night, he just basically has an atelier where people look over his shoulders and as he works. I think it's great. You know, that's a fantastic way to start. The problem that happens is when you quit the day job and it's like, now I have to be a provider because you're a guy and a guy provides. That's like, there is miles of baggage around, you know, what that means to be a provider. But it certainly means a certain amount of money every single month. And that becomes hard, you know, at a certain point.
I think that was one of the scariest steps to kind of wrap my head around, because being a salary man for so long, suddenly the checks have to come from yourself, or you have a big project that pays off for the next few months. It's a different type of thinking of how money is processed that I've never had any training or talking to. You know, I didn't come from a family of wealth, so I didn't have like a bunch of mentors to tell to me about how money actually works. So I'm all, a lot of self-education on that part. But you're touching on a subject that is very important that I feel like a lot of entrepreneurship, they do cover a bit, but they stay really on the positive side. It's like, hey, you have that passion, you go for it. You have something that the someone out there doesn't have a product for and you're filling a need. But like the partnership, the relationship and the turmoil of that and going to business with friends and trusting family and oh my God, if someone told me that, hey, going to business with a best friend or something actually will be a terrible thing. You better be better be prepared to say goodbye to that friendship and nothing works out, right?
Yeah.
Was not
friend or the business.
Exactly. Would love to hear more about that side, because that's something that I'm learning just by doing this. It's just like it's hard to grab a beer with a friend that like screwed you over recently, you know? Like the trust right there is not the same when something like that can happen, because it really tests a relationship. I always kind of compared it to like a second marriage. It's like everything is just fast forward 50 years with the worst possible conditions, and you're just stress testing what you guys are made of, basically. And would love to hear your thoughts about that.
My wife and I went into partnership in this in the beginning, and that is one of the more painful things to experience. In fact, just yesterday we reincorporated as a C corp in Delaware, just because some investors, that's what they're requesting from us, and we exited my wife from the business, so she all the shares just went to me because it's too hard, you know, like. We had to make a decision. What's the better relationship? And obviously the better relationship is husband and wife than business partner. I mean, that was just an ancillary thing. But that's hard to deal with. And, you know, I think the primary thing that I look at now and that I like to help people understand is that as a creative, you're a business person, whatever. Doesn't matter. You know, you might be an employee. You might have your own company. Who cares? Either way, in today's industry, when the skill, the half-life of a skill is probably 2 years now, maybe yeah. 3 if you're lucky, yeah. like, and you're having to reskill. If you are focused entirely on you as an artist and what you are a specialist in today, you will be out of a job in 5 years. Hands down, guaranteed. I saw it. I experienced it. You know, the whole world of digital sculpting that I helped, you know, educate and I help, like, that world is still a very powerful, very thriving world, but it's much more competitive today. And so much of that has been moved to different geolocations that pay different salaries. And so that affects where I am here in California, in Laguna Beach, California, and you're Orange County. So, you know, this mm-hmm. place is insane, mm-hmm. you know? And, so there's all these pressures and these things that kind of affect it. And I've spent a little bit of time today trying to educate my digital sculptors to the fact that they have to wake up to realize that there's a half-life to this skill. Like, digital sculpting will change. It will, you know, and you got to be ready for what's next. It's still very viable. It's still lovely. It's, you know, if I have time to myself, I'm not spending that time. Oh, let's go in Substance Painter and do some stuff. I love Substance Painter, but if I have time to myself, I sculpt a face.
Yeah.
You know, and because it's so, Ofer did such an amazing job of like making that a program that goes straight to your heart, you know, and you love it. And he, you know, God bless him. He spent, I mean, when I worked there at Pixelogic, he would call me at 12:30 at night. You know, and he'd be working for another 3 hours after that call. Mm. I'd be asleep after that call because I was like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. And then he'd be in the office before I was in the office at 7 o'clock, right? So he gave his life to making this program that connects with people and changes their life. And, you know, you get a sense of it in there. But all of these skills have a half-life, and we have to always be thinking about ourselves, not just as this specialist that somebody's going to trade time for dollars, but you got to think of yourself as a brand and a business. And how do you expand outside of that? And education is one part of that. So I like to tell all my boot campers, anybody who's in here, you know, the worst case scenario for me is they get a job and they just grind on that job forever because now they're under the thumb of somebody else. Mm-hmm. You got to build a brand. Learn this skill, then go and teach other people this skill. And that's when you start teaching the community, you start engaging with the community, that builds your brand, that builds insulation, it builds connections. When this job doesn't work out, somebody's like, oh yeah, I learned this from you, right? Like one of my students, Corey Mullahan, he did this tutorial on gambesons, creating padded armor basically. And that helped him get a job because he's in the job interview and they're like, oh yeah, you're that guy that did that padded armor, that gambeson tutorial in Marvelous Designer. I used that on this project, and next thing you know, he's hired.
Yeah.
You know? So we have to be thinking about ourselves as more than the skills that we have. And I think that's the problem that we as creatives have. It's actually fundamental to our existence because we must dive in deep into our skill, develop that skill, and then we bring all that capacity back up to the surface to say, hey, I can do this. But what we brought back up is not the core of who we are. That's just the end product. The core of who we are as creatives is we are somebody who will dive deep, who will put the time in, who will digest, who will go into that dark wood and discover new stuff. That's the core of who we are as creatives. And that's our core capacity. That's the capacity that's going to create a brand and create revenue for us and create future jobs for us when AI and machine learning, I mean, machine learning now is doing stuff with 3D faces that blows my mind. And so are we in a world where Vimal and Hossein and these guys are going to be the best facial digital sculptors? Well, we are now. But what's going to happen in 5 years? You know, can I just feed a bunch of frames to the computer and it outputs Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, just a question.
Yeah. Look at those deep face.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So awesome. Yeah.
It's so great. But yeah.
There's one I like, Control Shift Face. I'm actually subscribed to his Patreon, and he's just unreal.
So that guy, he's like the main guy doing this, right? Uh-huh. And all those YouTube virals is most likely from Control Shift Face. And it's just one guy. I feel like it's like a whole government.
I know.
Right? That's just putting these out just to usher in a new world right here. But But I completely agree with you. This is a skill set that most developers kind of forget. That personality, right? So we're talking about game education. We're in a weird phase right now. I don't know if you agree, where a lot of like a traditional game art schools, at least I grew up with the Art Institute, and there was a phase that there was a lot of these schools kind of offering game programs that, you know, honestly wasn't any good, right? As expected. Mm-hmm. And they closed down, rightfully so, because they were kind of not delivering on the goods. But at the same time, there's like this onslaught of interests for game development, right? With the streamers, with the YouTube, there's a huge amount of awareness of games actually being made by people now more than ever. So there's a whole lot more students wanting to learn, but the traditional schools aren't really there. Maybe we have like the universities here and there, but you know, here. Mm-hmm. Pepper here and there, but I largely equate it to like the Wild West right now with game education. And the only thing I feel that differentiates one school from another is the branding, the personalities, like who's teaching it, who's running it, right? Because to me, it gives that extra oomph of differentiality that actually matters to me, right? Your experience, how do you talk, what your belief is. Because if I'm just going in to learning to some substance painter from a no face, it doesn't feel as real. It doesn't feel as, especially a lot of these tutorials, you look at the resume, they never worked anywhere. It's like, why should I? We're learning techniques and you don't even know if it's applicable in an actual game setting, right? And that's really dangerous.
Totally.
So what is your... we're ushering a new decade, right? 2020. What is your outlook for the next 3 to 5 years on game education? Let's just circle it into the United States. We do have international listeners out there. But just United State-wise, like, I'm pretty uncertain. I know we have a lot of online communities such as yours that is doing great game education. But I wonder if that is the future. It's just like these online communities kind of teaching each other and just no real like big player like a university or something, because the only thing, just sorry to keep going off tangent, the only thing that I've heard that has been like the biggest thing in a university was offering a pro gamer scholarship at like USC or something. And that was making headlines before game development, right? So that's a whole different thing. This is really odd.
I know. You tell people you work in games and they're like, oh yeah, didn't that guy make a million? And you're like, which one of my friends made a million? Shit. Yeah. Right? Because like, I remember the story when I was working at Noman. I remember the story of the artist who's like, he bought a Ferrari with his bonus from Blizzard.
Man.
And like, you know, those. So I'm like, who did that? And then it took a while and it was like, oh my God, that's right. They're talking about some Fortnite, some esports thing.
Yeah.
And so they just don't understand it. But that's the way it's been. And that's why this industry is so ill served by traditional education. And it's because, you know, it's just, it's not their focus, right? And it's so new. So I would say, and the reason, I mean, I saw some of this stuff coming up. I'd been training students for 9 years now. I saw that when I did, like, for example, when we built UArtsy, and we built it as like a class warehouse. And you know, the goal was to build this out and offer a whole bunch of classes and give people a whole bunch of room to grow that would beat traditional education. And what I discovered was 50% of the people or more don't show up for classes. Mm-hmm. They just buy it. Mm-hmm. And that got under my skin. And you know, because it wasn't about building a business that made revenue and, you know, like that's how I didn't get into business for that. Again, I was an accidental entrepreneur. I got into it for a mission. I wanted to make a difference. So when 50% of the people don't show up and they don't even turn in homework, they don't do anything. I was like, something's wrong here. I'm not happy. Somebody else would be happy with this system. And I'm sure there's you can build a beautiful school out of it and make a difference in the world, but I couldn't. And so, you know, we shut that down and we looked for what the next path was. And the basic question I was trying to answer was what's going to help somebody get a job, keep a job, and, you know, enjoy the job for an extended period of time. And what we landed on is kind of a simple framework, which is what we use in the boot camps. It's what I train by religiously today. And that's that. Number one, we have to remember that what we're doing is you're training for a job. There's somebody out there who wants to pay you. They don't need to. They want to pay you money to do this job. They want to intentionally, purposefully give you money so that you can survive, do something you love, and they want to do that. Why do they want to do that? They want to do that because somebody's going to pay them money to achieve something through a product or something like that, and they figured out how to make, you know, this stuff work. It's a job. You've got to figure out what that person needs, right? And so the way we talk about it in the bootcamp is there's a graph, and it goes in two dimensions, okay? A normal XY graph. On one side, there's the breadth. There's the breadth of what you can achieve. So if we look at stylized characters, for example, you've got to be able to do a base, sculpt the hands, sculpt the head, sculpt clothing, do the low res. You got to do the texture and you got to pose it. So those are the eight phases, let's say. All right. So those are eight things. You have to be able to do all of those to get a job in games doing stylized work. Now, if you want to work at high res or you want to work at Blizzard, you know, each one of those studios, you need to start to be able to do each stage better, right? Your blocking needs to be better, quicker. Your hands need to be better, quicker. If you want to work at Blizzard, you got to be top notch in all of those things. If you want to sculpt in miniatures, you actually only need to know six of those things. You only need to know blocking, hands, head, clothing, And really, that's it. You got to know four, let's say. So where do you want to work? What do you want to do? What's your North Star, as in your studio? So that's what I always ask people to do. Find out who your North Star is, because that's going to reverse engineer everything. And everybody always says, I want to work at Naughty Dog. Why do you want to work at Naughty Dog? Is this just a pissing contest? Are you just trying to say, you know, I'm doing this because I want to be the greatest, you know? Well, how are you going to get there? Right? What's your focus? And how can we be intentional about developing ourselves as creatives, as, you know, entrepreneurs, and as people who, you know, are controlling our own destiny, you know? And so I always ask, what's your North Star? So if you want to work at Blizzard, okay, well, here's the things that you got to do. You got to do these eight things and you got to do it this well. So when we talk about the next 3 years, it's basically fits within that framework. We got to know what are the things that people are going to be wanting within 3 years. So one of the things that's coming up now is artists should know some programming for the future. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's something to learn, but it's not a pain. So learn Python. And there's plenty of free sources to teach that, but it's what we're starting to introduce now because we know that in the future, artists are going to need it. They're going to need it to interface with machine learning programs, and they're going to need to become their own tech artists to some extent. So they got to do these 8 things plus 9. They got to learn some coding. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do they need to be able to code in machine language? Like, you know, Ofer is the primary developer of ZBrush. And so he's like my primary source to understand programming. And he's crazy. Like what he achieves is, you know, out of this world. So there's parts of ZBrush that, as I understand it, are machine coded. Like he's writing in machine language, which is the language other programs are compiled down into. And he is subverting certain Windows management routines so that they operate better for his program. And, you know, all of these things he's doing. Do you need to be able to do all of that stuff? No, you don't need to be a software engineer who's dealing with databases. You need to be somebody, you know, who knows a certain level of coding to get to a certain point. And so if there's one shift that I see coming, I do think, and I train my artists on this all the time, proceduralism is key. You have to keep proceduralism in your pocket because proceduralism is the gateway to machine learning. Machine learning is the gateway to actual artificial intelligence. So this pathway will happen no matter what because the efficiencies are too great. The companies will do it. Like if you've seen, was it Promethean AI? Have you seen that?
I heard of it. Yeah.
It's a really cool system. I don't know the mechanics behind it. I just know the videos. And, you know, basically it's that system where it's, you say, hey, I want an 1980s boys room, and it'll put the Star Wars poster, the Back to the Future, and it'll put all that stuff up. And then you say, I want it to be messy, and it'll make everything off axes, right? And you think about that one process of making something messy. Making something messy is a procedural process. What is messy? Messy is simply a certain amount of things off axes with a certain variance. This is procedural, right? So if I was to go in and make a room messy, a 3D room messy, I would do a series of procedural things I can train a computer to do. That kind of stuff is going to just become automated.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time. So what we have to be thinking about is, number one, where do I want to work? What do they need? What are their needs? And I need to first off get my foot in the door. So if I'm in the industry already, that's a different question. But if I'm looking at this and I'm like, hey, I want to be a game artist. I love what these guys are talking about here. I love what Brendan's talking about here in this podcast and all these things, these people that you bring on. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, I want to be one of these people. Well, training for the job is different than doing the job is what I tell my people.
Yeah.
Because the first thing you have to do is you have to attract somebody's attention. That's it. Whatever attracts attention, that's what you got to do. You got to be the shiny object. Then you got to worry about keeping your job. That's different. The first thing is, what do I do that attracts attention and helps somebody see that, you know, I'm a job candidate. I have capacity. That's it. You know, just focus on that and don't get too caught up on all the crazy stuff that's coming. You know, because there's going to be time, I think. And there's difficulties. And I mean, you know, I know plenty of people that have been phased out of the technology. I'm constantly getting phased out of the technology. It's harder and harder for me to teach this stuff. But at the same time, you know, that's kind of the stuff I love to do. Like, I love to learn this. I love to learn the frameworks of it. You know, so I stay in it for that. But there's a million ways for us to think about our brand and our business outside of us being the ones that execute, you know, cause, and I'm rambling a little bit, but, I think it's Tim, Champerzone's an example of somebody who's kind of gone out and expanded, his brand to include all kinds of other activities and now started to serve not just as the warrior, but as the leader. And I think this is the transition I've had to make as a creative. And it's the thing that I think is important for anybody exploring the entrepreneurial journey. You have to understand that being the artist is what might get you interested. It might be your first stage of validation, but you will die on that battlefield.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. You need to be a leader that has a vision and that is providing a framework for, you know, all the stuff that you've already experienced, you know, and use that as the foundation for your product. You know, don't just trade your time for dollars in an activity that now, you know, you used to get paid $45 now to do it, but now I can get somebody to do it for $10 and they're actually better. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reality today. So why would you want to die on that battlefield? Don't. Reframe your thinking and stop being this person who's fighting for this other person's dollar. That's a lose-lose. Elevate yourself, elevate your vision of yourself, and try to find a way that you can become a leader for this problem. And that's what I've been struggling to do, because it's really hard to transition from artist to leader. Like, I'm reading this book, which I never expected to like. It's called Bury My Heart in Conference Room B. And my brother gave it to me. My brother, like, he runs dental offices. He's very much a business guy. And I was like, I don't know if I want to read any book my brother recommended to me. But it is an amazing book that talks about how you build culture in companies and how you transition from being this person that's just going to be out there and die on the battlefield to being this person that's leading other people and helping pave a path for their glory and yours too. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. You're talking about your going your utmost ability. And we were talking about at the very beginning, you only have a limited amount of time, for your output. And the best way to do that is to 2X, 3X it by involving other people. That's where the partnership kind of thing, you know, the danger of that. But if you do it right, you know, you tend to kind of give up responsibility, which is another scary thing, and letting other people thrive as not just your goal, but their goals as well. And it's something... Yeah. It's phases, man. I wish this was more part of our, and what you are doing is a great service to a lot of game developers out there. Part of our game education, because the 4 to 5 year thing is real. You get outdated really quick. Sure, you want to go to Naughty Dog, but why don't you talk to that Naughty Dog guy doing the job that you want and ask him how he feels, right? I think a lot of students just look at one step ahead and not look at themselves, you know, when they're 30 or 40. Do you really want to still be a Naughty Dog? You know, everyone crunches like crazy, right? So it's something that I feel like only services like yours can, that really care about the students, to have the relativity to kind of express these knowledge to them. I feel like a lot of the online schools, there's a lot of them, just teach the techniques and just move on, which is, I think, a huge failing, a huge disservice, because it's dishonest. Our industry is not that strong where once you're in, you're good, right? Come on. Come on, right? I mean, what we're doing on a lot of these cases here is to demonstrate to students that you got to have the overall perspective. Go out there, you know, build up that skill set, but also build up your brand so you differentiate. Mm-hmm. And it is, like you said, much easier to come into an interview with the ArtStation community or whatever that people have actually come across you. Like, just like that, you're like one-upping your competitor based on your personality, not just solely on your work. Huge.
Yeah. Ross Baxter is a good example of this. He runs a podcast, Student Art Podcast. And he started when he was a student, you know, no validation at all. So start now, you know, like people like yourself, you know, you're out there now and you're giving back to this community and sharing and creating this. And, you know, this is a fantastic thing to be doing, whether it gets monetized or not. It's like, for every stage of what we want to do, going out there and sharing stuff. Like, I created a podcast and, you know, all of these things where you just go out there and you give, it's part of our give to the community. It just helps your brand.
Exactly. And, you know, we're getting short on time, but I do want to kind of segue with that. We've had a lot of Unity evangelists come on the show. And I don't know, you've met a lot of these, that community, but it's usually a lot of young developers that straight from high school started a channel and just gathered this huge community, and Unity just hires them to kind of help spread that community out and let people. And I look at these like 20-year-olds as like, oh my God, you good job. But like, I wish I had that guidance to kind of start young because 10 years from then, I would be in this comfortable spot of having a lot of options. And it's just something that's like, and I think in our era, our generation, no one told us about, right? No one really, they always talked about like Cliff Bleszinski getting his Lamborghini from Gears of War. It's like, oh, so that's how I can kind of get off. It's like, nope, that world is done, dude. They don't hand out bonuses anymore. It's done. No more, no more epic lot full of Lambos. That doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. So,
missed that boat. I wish I would have known that.
I know, with the call, early Call of Duty days, if you hear those stories, oh my God, it would just melt your brain. But yeah, it's a different industry now. And I think it's always falls back to, not just games, right? Any industry to be really, to future proof, you just got to really concentrate on yourself. Brand yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't be part of just another company. Don't strive to just be a part of another company's branding, right? If anything, just help yourself. And no matter what happens, the changing tides or whatever, you'll be relevant, which is one of the main points, right? So, Ryan, I want to thank you for doing an hour of podcasting. My camera, I believe, is still, it's just hiccuping the whole time.
There you go.
But thank you for your patience. And this is the part where I hand the mic over to you to promote, shout out, give attention to anything that you want to. So go for it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, if the primary thing that we do now that I could tell people about is to head over to gameartinstitute.com. And we actually have the character artist and the environment artist. These are the two areas where we put an enormous amount of love in. These meet twice a week. And we focus on building a portfolio and grinding through the process as much as possible. So that's the thing I'm most proud of. And we just started an immersive, which is a, I think it's 16 weeks, 5 days a week program for game artists. That's going to go through this whole, I mean, we're just going to cover everything. And it's an alternative to traditional education to get you into it faster, cheaper. With the same skill set so that you graduate, you have the sit, you're a job candidate for the same job as some other school that's going to take you 4 years and charge you, I mean, at this point, 10 to 20 times the amount of what, Game Art Institute would, you know? So, my focus is training game artists and giving them the tools. It's been my focus for 3 years. So just come visit me at gameartinstitute.com and apply for an interview.
Awesome. So for everyone that's listening, watching, just check out the description links and go to Game Art Institute. I want to thank you, Ryan, for coming on the show. But thank you for starting me on the journey of ZBrush. I am dead serious. The first tutorial I got onto was yours, and awesome. It helped me in a huge way. And as you guys can tell, tremendous educators, tremendous speaker, very motivational. And it's talking about real shit, man. So I want to thank you, Ryan, for coming on.
Absolutely.
And
thank you.
We gotta link up sometime. I'm throwing it out there.
Sounds great.
All right. So thank
sunsets,
you.
Sunsets are great from here. So sunsets and wine, bring the family.
All right. Cool. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. See ya.